So, did anybody notice what year? No one notices this. My phone's up here. Okay, so we were singing Keith Green this morning, and I noticed, for some reason, that it was from 1980. And I don't remember a lot of what was happening in the 80s, especially in 1980. But I have a song, I'm starting with a song, from, I think, 1982. And I don't know if you'll be able to hear it. Maybe I'll do this. A couple people are laughing. I think they recognize it already. Yeah? So 1982, also piano, not Keith Green's style, but pretty famous. There's a couple of lyrics. Anyway, anybody?
Border.
Close. Very close. Journey? Yes. Don't Stop Believin', which... I even have a picture of them. I did not have this album, but some of you might have. Anyway, I was hoping my uncle would be here because I thought there was a good chance Brad might remember these guys. I don't know. Anyway, so Journey, Don't Stop Believing. How is he going to connect this to the sermon? Okay, so here's the connection. The book of Hebrews, kind of the whole book, There's a running theme through the whole book. Lots of the language is journey kinds of language. There's words about paying attention to how you're traveling, to just lots of words that are about moving from one place to another. There's a huge journey motif. And one of the other themes, one of the reasons the book was written was, because it's called Hebrews, right? Who's it written to? Wild guess, stab in the dark. Yes, Hebrew people, so Hebrew Christians, guys who were Jewish and believed in Christ and were thinking about, you know, maybe we should just go back to what we were doing before. This new Jesus thing isn't going on so well. The point of the letter is, speaking to those guys, don't stop believing. So anyway, it really worked for me. I hope that kind of works for you. Journey, don't stop believing. So, I'm going to steal. Some of you might have this nice little outline at the front. Not all of you will. So, I'm just going to be up front. I'm going to steal this outline, and it's my plan. I'm going to go out on a limb and assume this is not the last time I get to preach at Lucky Lake. So, the next time, I'm going to be also preaching from Hebrews. So, this is the introduction to a maybe 5-sermon series. We'll see how it goes. Or if you stop inviting me after 2, it's a 2-sermon series. So I'm totally stealing some of... They're not always... Like, sometimes I'm like, not that helpful. But this one, actually, they used a lot of the words that I was familiar with and thought about anyway. So if you're looking at it, there's 7... These guys did 7 chunks. And I was kind of thinking more like 5, but it doesn't matter. Does anybody else have this in the Bible that they have? There are 5 times Christ's superior this, Christ's superior, he's better than. So the author of Hebrews is taking something that's familiar, which is like to the Hebrew Christians, those first guys that were Jews first. This part's all pretty familiar to them, right? That's the part we share in the Bible. So they know this story, and he's saying, yes, yes, and Jesus is better. I know you're talking about this. That's good. Jesus is better. And he uses this word a whole bunch of times in Hebrews. So Jesus, in this first part, Christ's superior revelation, which connects closely to Christ's superiority over angels. I dare you to say superiority 5 times fast. So Christ's superiority to angels. So, where was I? Oh, Jesus is a better messenger. So it's all well and good to receive, and he's not saying those are bad. So in the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets, at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, and through whom he made the universe. It goes on a little bit about that. So, it's all well and good to have a message from the king, but how much better is it to have hand-delivered by the prince? Jesus, this is good. Jesus is better. And then, to be honest, the rest of chapter 1 is 7 different examples. The author is like, here's an example of what I'm saying. Here's another example. Yet again, I will be his father. He will be my son. And again, and he says that. It's bam, bam, again. 7 times. He finishes the chapter with, here's a whole load of examples, guys, of why Jesus is better. So I'm not going to review all of those. I'm just going to say my observation is, once you say something 7 times, I'm like, need I say more? No. Next. So next is chapter 2. He says, we must pay careful attention, therefore, and I think I've done this at this church a few times. When you see therefore, and nobody's nodding yet, you take a look, yeah, okay, you do remember. You look and see what it's there for. So in this case, I could have started the sermon there and said, therefore, and then look back. It's there because of, okay, now that I've said Jesus is a better messenger, we must pay more careful attention to what we have heard so that we do not drift away. I do not have a clip from Drift Away, any of the versions of what songs might be Drift Away. So another, it's the journey motif, right? It's a sailing metaphor. You're paying careful attention as you come into port so that you do not drift away from the harbor. Right. So we need to pay careful attention to what God has been telling us. Not only to what we have in the Bible, what we have seen in signs, wonders, miracles, spiritual gifts, those are all important, but there's more. We need to pay careful attention to Jesus, who is the best messenger God has sent. God chose to make Jesus the ruler of the world that is to come and to send him as a perfect messenger of that future age. He has placed the universe under the control and authority of Jesus, giving him glory and honor. I used to think that it would be great to have to sit in the hospital because you just sit in bed all the time, right? And if I'm just sitting there, I can read, I can maybe watch TV and maybe read and sleep and read. And this is a while ago that I thought this, okay? This is not a recent idea. But from the outside looking in, I'm like, how is that a bad plan? If I could design a day, that's how I would probably do it. I would sit and read. And then I broke my leg badly enough that I needed pins in it. And within, I don't know, by the time the morphine started to wear off, I'm like, time to go home. I remember sitting. I don't remember if I was, it must have been 2 nights in the hospital. I don't even remember. It's all kind of a blur because what I remember was sitting there going, time to go home, I'm going crazy. And I might have left, like I might have just gone to wait in the parking lot, except that I had pins in my foot and I couldn't walk. I hated it. It was awful. I thought I was maybe coming unhinged by the time mom could get me. I didn't care. I'm like, yeah, it hurts. Let's go out. I don't ever want to come back. Which, I mean, I have a few times since. But it was awful. And you don't really get it until you had to do it yourself. So now I know what it feels like. All of that to say, Jesus lived on earth, and he knows what it feels like. He had the same flesh and blood as we are. He experienced all of human life the same way we do. He got sand in his eyes. He got blisters and calluses. He knows what it's like to be sick. He knows what it's like to be lonely. He knows what it's like to cry with his friends and to go fishing and all of it. Everything you can think of, Jesus knows what that's like. He knows what it feels like to be abandoned by God, to feel abandoned by God. God saw fit to allow Christ to set aside his lofty position for a time and experience every aspect of human life. In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 7, it says, "You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor and put everything under his feet." In a couple of places in Hebrews already, I didn't read it, but in chapter 1, verse 13, it says, "Sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet." There's already a couple of these references to, for a while, Jesus was made low, like a little lower than the angels, like us, but God raises him up, and his enemies are a footstool under his feet. And that was actually a real thing. If you were a conquering king, and you crushed these guys, you would get one of those guys to carve their names into your footstool. You'd be like, plunk, when I sit on my throne, plunk, these guys are under my feet. And nobody's questioning it. When you come in to talk to me, I'm sitting on this big chair up here, because then you have to look up, plunk, and their names, I have my enemies under my feet. It's reminding you. And that's what it says. Eventually, like, Jesus doesn't stay low, lower than angels. Eventually, God puts everything under his feet. And it's a bit confusing to try and think of both at the same time, but that's kind of the balance. We want to remember, as much as God has placed Jesus at the highest place, for a time, he got sand in his eyes, and he knows what it's like. So, verse 10, "In bringing many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering." And mine says author. Some of you might be noticing a different word. Any volunteers? Founder, that's a great one. Anybody else? That plays right in, that's a great segue word. Founder. Some of the other ones might say pioneer or leader, perfect leader, one of them said. Founder is even better than the ones I found. Can I get away with asides? I'll do a little aside. I'll step over here because it's an aside. So the Bible was not written in English, right? We all know this. So it was written in Greek. And when we get 2,000 years on, even when we have, we've got King James, maybe in the 1500s, and then different versions, 1800s, 19, there's this thing called drift in language. So even the stuff, yes, King James is English, but I'm like, I have to read this 3 times. I'm not sure what it says. Even the stuff that's 100 years old, I might be like, we don't use that word anymore. So that's why I say things like, maybe your version has this. I'm like, well, they're not wrong, but you can't just take this word in Greek and make it equal this word in English, because it just doesn't always fit. And even if it's the same word, like, well, but in context, we don't do that. It's obvious to this guy, but it's not obvious to me because I'm not a shepherd or right, whatever. We just don't always get to... So, none of these are bad, but author of salvation, pioneer is a great one. Founder, I'm excited about, because that's kind of the point that I'm going to be making this morning, is to follow our pioneer, who is a better messenger. If any of you are taking notes, that's my 7-word summary of today. Follow your pioneer, who is a better messenger. Christ is the pioneer of our salvation. He has gone ahead of us to deal with sin so that we can journey with him towards maturity. So, because I was ranting on about writing it in Greek, so these guys are writing from the context of, Greek was the language of commerce. It's sort of like English today. If you want to do business anywhere, you can probably get by if both of you can do English. So these guys in their world, because of Alexander the Great, he conquered his known world and got almost all the way to Persia, right? From Macedonia. And they're all speaking Greek. And in Greek literature, this is a pretty common story where you have a town that gets too big, so they say, let's get this guy to help us start a new colony. And they send him off, and he goes over here, and he would be known for his confidence, and he's probably a strong fellow, and he's popular with everyone. And they go and start a new colony. And he goes first and says, this will be a good spot. Come over here, and we'll start another town. This is a common thing in Greek literature, apparently. It's not like I read Greek literature, but apparently this is a common theme in Greek literature, this new colony. This is a story we're pretty familiar with in Saskatchewan. My great-grandfather grows up in a little fishing village in northern Scotland and eventually outgrows the town, and he comes on a ship over to, he spends some time in Toronto, works his way out to Saskatchewan, finds his way to Saskatoon, looks at a place on a map, and buys this piece of land, which he's never seen, and then walks 100 miles to settle it. We're familiar with the pioneer kind of idea. Someone goes to a new place and starts over. But he wasn't just himself in the middle of nowhere. His new neighbors, a lot of them were old neighbors. They had gone before him, and letters had gone home to say, this is good, come. He didn't just make it up. Where can I go, spin the globe, and put his finger down? Somebody had already gone ahead of him and said, this is a good place, come and we'll start a new community. He had people with him. People who knew the difficulties that he would face, and you stand together and work through them and watch out for one another. This is the pioneering that Jesus has done for us. Jesus is the first among brothers. In verse 14, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. I don't think I usually do two songs in one sermon. Does anybody remember a few years ago, not as long as the 1980s, but a few years ago there was a song called One of Us, Joan Osborne. I'm not a huge Joan Osborne fan. I'd much rather have Journey in the house, but Joan Osborne had this song, if God had a name, what would it be? And would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask if you had just one question? What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us, just a stranger on the bus trying to make his way home. Since the children are made of flesh and blood, God saw fit for our pioneer, our captain, our founder, to live as flesh and blood, like a regular guy on the bus making his way home from the daily grind to a home that he doesn't necessarily think is so great. He knows what it's like to be one of us. What if God was one of us? I've always wanted to answer Joan. I think he'd be a regular guy with some friends who are fishermen and tax collectors. Because God was one of us. He came and was among us. In the past, God sent messengers who gave his word in the Bible. Jesus came from heaven to experience human life and to break the bonds of death so that we might be set free from the fear of dying. So because he has done all this, he's able to build a bridge between people and God. Jesus can be the go-between, the high priest. That's the job of the high priest. He's the bridge builder. He's both and. You connect. Jesus can be the go-between because he fits in with humanity as well as with God. He's able to deal with sin and reconcile humankind with God. He understands what we're going through and can help us in time of temptation. So, back in 14, verse 14. Because Jesus was flesh and blood like the rest of us, his death breaks the power of death. When he died and was resurrected, he became the first fruit, the first among brothers, the pioneer into life after death. Eternity doesn't begin later. It has already begun. Jesus is not dead. He has been raised to life again. And the grave is empty. Jesus sits now at the right hand of God the Father Almighty and intercedes for us. That's the continuing work of Christ. What he has done is has been killed. He died and was resurrected. What he is doing is interceding for us on our behalf. The ongoing work of Christ is reconciliation. By offering himself as a perfect sacrifice, Jesus deals with our sin. It is by the blood of Jesus that we are considered righteous, because it deals with our sin in a final and complete way. Follow our pioneer, who is a better messenger. So through the work of Christ, we can become holy. Without Jesus, we tend to get muddy and get off the track. And he's not ashamed of us. Even though we're too dirty to come to the table, verse 11 says, both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. The message of the gospel, the message of Jesus, the message we carry with us and tell to others is, the power of sin is now broken. Sin, which stands between us and our holy God, has been dealt with by the sacrifice of the Holy One, who is Jesus. And Jesus is not put off by our sins. Think about the people he spent his time with. They weren't sort of the shining white-collar crowd. They were rough and tumble. None of us is without sin, not even one. Jesus is glad to come and dwell among us, to know what it is to be fully human and to lay down his life to deal with our sin forever. We can stand before a holy God because Jesus is our merciful and faithful high priest who stands in the presence of God and speaks on our behalf. Follow our pioneer, who is a better messenger.